the story so far. Hot on Galen's trail, Cyril finds the abandoned house, and more importantly, the mysterious eye that Galen left behind. When he holds the mysterious relic, Cyril is shown a vision that leads him to believe that Galen is still unaware of who he truly is. But then the eye treats Cyril to a second vision, one concerning both the future and the coyote, that Cyril finds alarming. After leaving the house, he's then confronted by Miles Lawton, the boy who Cyril calls the Master. But when Miles tells Cyril to only find and observe Galen and not to kill him, it becomes Cyril's turn to question his allegiances. Chapter 15. Galen lay on the ground, staring up into the morning sky as he replayed the scene in his head. It hadn't been a dream, this much was certain. Dreams were wispy and hollow memories whose details faded quickly, like ripples in a pond. What he'd seen was a dormant memory, a fragment unearthed in the shifting sands of his mind, as if dug up by an archaeologist. Over and over, he was able to replay every moment of his incarceration, every sleepless night in that stuffy cell, every beating he'd been given at the hands of Kentuck and the fat sheriff. All of it leading up to his trip to the gallows and his short 5-foot drop and slow agonizing strangle. As it did each time, the memory of Sagebrush ended moments after he had seen the man with the charred wings and the dire warning had been delivered. Galen remembered the pain he felt, the unrelenting pressure of asphyxiation exploding behind his eyes each time that trapdoor fell open beneath his feet. What it truly meant, though, was the fine folks of Sagebrush had indeed made good on their promise to execute him. "The day I woke up in the cell," he wondered as it hit him. It had to have not been the day of his hanging as he originally thought, but a day or more later. And though he had no memory of it, Galen reckoned they must have taken his body back to the jail while the entire town celebrated, just waiting until there was someone sober enough to bury him. He did remember what he'd seen, though, as he walked alone through the town's deserted streets, the mangled and bloodied bodies of every adult and child who had been freshly slaughtered. Whomever had done this had come in a large pack, he thought. Whom? Or what? The thought bothered him greatly, because in the recesses of his mind, this memory was somehow connected to something he was not able to see, a mist still beyond his grasp. And there was one thing he was certain of, though. His stopping to help Maria was a detour he'd consciously taken in order to purposely delay his progress. However, it was clear to Galen that there had to be more than just procrastination involved here. This woman had been put in his path for a reason, he reckoned. He'd been given the choice to intervene or walk away, and he chose the former at his own peril. Whether it was a test or not, he now believed that ensuring this Mexican woman's survival was a key to his journey and the end result therein. Is it selfish to offer up a selfless act for this reason? He wondered. Is it too late to buy my salvation? Suddenly, with a loud crash, Galen's mind was torn away from his thinking when the wooden gate on the wagon fell open. Maria had awoken in the back, disoriented and in tremendous pain, her foot finding the door. After looking up, Galen ran toward the wagon, and at first the woman he had begun calling Maria looked at him with an expression of relief. But as she began to realize the approaching man was not her husband, but another man dressed in the clothes of her husband, her expression turned to one of complete horror. It was at that moment her recollection of the recent past came crashing back with terrible brutality, and she began trying to emit a hysterical scream from her butchered mouth. She remembered how the hillbillies had ambushed them. She remembered how they dragged her husband from the wagon and how two of them held him down on the ground by his shoulders, while the third cut his throat with a large dirty knife. Galen came to her, and at first she shoved him away, punching at him. He didn't try to block her hysterical swinging blows, but instead drew her closer until she finally fell sobbing into his arms. It was when he put his cheek against her forehead that he could feel the intense fever that was burning her up. Galen made the decision quickly. Once she had calmed down and expelled all of her strength and energy, she lay down and sobbed herself back into unconsciousness. He harnessed up the two horses with the intention of heading out and looking for a town of some kind, hopefully one that had a doctor. He climbed into the driver's seat and picked up the reins when the absence of the burro came to mind. Blue, he thought, but the deaf and mostly blind creature was nowhere in sight. Galen reckoned the old thing most likely wandered off and passed away in its sleep. In a way, it really was a relief, mostly because Galen realized he would have had to have left Old Blue behind, on account of how he'd been slowing them down. If Maria indeed had some kind of infection, every minute would count. He took the reins and nervously pointed the cart eastward, for they still had not picked up the trailhead, and there had been no indication they were headed in the direction of one. In truth, Galen had no idea what state or territory they were in, or how far away the next town would be. As Galen pushed forward, the woods began to thin, and the ground began to rise until there was nothing above his head other than sun and air. The forest had opened up into a half-mile-wide corridor lined with trees, and though the woods seemed to thicken on either side of him, what lay ahead appeared to be a clear path. For the next 2 hours, he pushed the horses up the hill, noticing the rise was growing steeper and steeper, until he found himself at the top of a fairly large gorge. He dared bring the wagon only so close to the edge before dismounting. Below him, another forest spread as far as the eye could see, the leafy green canopy headed all the way to the horizon. From his many travels, Galen knew the country had been carpeted with these thick ancient woods everywhere. But it was off to the north, just a bit, that Galen spotted it, a thin plume of smoke miles off in the distance. He squinted and looked again. This time his eyes caught it, the gray wisps of at least two other smoky plumes, telltale indications of some kind of settlement or town. Galen's eyes darted back and forth, scanning the woods until he saw it, a thin break in the tree line headed directly toward where those fires were burning. The trail, Galen thought. But where was the way down into those woods several hundred feet below? It had to be here somewhere. He kept looking from the rim of the gorge into the basin where the forest started anew. Nowhere in sight was there a way down. Galen scratched his head. Suddenly, from his right, he heard a noise, and as fast as a single beat of his heart, he had drawn one of the Colts and turned, pointing the barrel of one of the heavy dragoons in the direction of the noise. The rustling of feet came again, and Galen quietly drew the second gun, thumbing back both of the revolver's hammers at the same time. He took a breath and held it to keep his aim steady. The moment whomever it was coming toward him stepped out where he could be seen, Galen was going to let the twin Colts make short work of him. The rustling grew closer still, and as Galen tensed his fingers on the triggers, ready to fire, out from the brush came. Blue? Galen asked, quite stunned to see the animal he'd thought dead. The burro's aged and scarred face, along with the deeply bowed spine, had given it away immediately. Blue stepped right up to Galen and licked his hand, the typical Blue indication that he wanted jerky. Sorry, old pal, I don't have any. Galen spoke, then noticed the spot from the underbrush where he'd seen Blue emerge from. There was the trailhead. Galen took another look at the burro. Given the pace in which Blue walked, the old fleabag had to have left camp last night to get here. Blue! Galen shouted right into the burro's ear. And when the beast didn't startle or even respond, Galen was certain it was indeed the same deaf creature he'd been dragging with him ever since leaving Sagebrush. He reached down and scratched the burrow between the ears and shook his head in disbelief before tying Blue's lead to the back of the wagon. Maria was still asleep, and as Galen reached over to put a hand on her forehead, her fingers shot out and wrapped around his wrist like a steel trap. Instantly, her eyes opened wide, full of hate and anger. Her mouth, still encrusted with the dried blood and mucus on her chin, parted, and from untold depths within her throat came a hiss. A hiss that evaporated into a deep growling whisper. "We shall live in his house. We shall live in his name. We shall live in his house. We shall live." The whisper from Maria's throat faded away, as did her grip on his arm. Slowly her eyes closed, and her body relaxed, resuming the same heavy unconscious breathing as before. Galen watched her chest rise up and down to make sure she was indeed alive. "In his name," Galen said to himself. "In his name." Galen spent most of the remaining daylight navigating the two-horse wagon down the serpentine path cut into the woods by the gorge, through brush that appeared dense from afar, but then seemingly vanished as he got closer. After one sharp turn, he spied what looked like trouble ahead, a thick deadfall obstructing the way down. With the path so narrow, there would be no way to turn the wagon around, and Galen cursed himself for not walking the trail first, to make sure he wasn't going to get himself into trouble by taking the wagon down here. There was a heavy sense of foreboding coming from the woods, for though there was nothing he could hear, Galen was almost sure something lurked out there, and whatever it was most likely watching him. For the first time, Galen felt the horses become scattered in their focus. He was not the only one getting spooked by this dark and uneasy trail. With the reins, he pushed them ahead to get a closer look at the deadfall, and again, as he got near, what first seemed to be an impassable juncture was indeed navigable, if just barely. Galen drove through an opening carefully as its edges brushed lightly against the side of the wagon. To Galen's surprise, the breach was exactly the same width as the wagon itself, and he heard the branches rattle through the spokes of the wheels as he passed. And yet, moments after he had gone through the opening in the deadfall, he turned to look back, and again it appeared to be an unbreachable wall of forest debris. "Just a trick of the light," Galen thought to himself. "That's all." As he reached the bottom of the basin, the woods gave way to a clear-cut path that was obviously some kind of road. Galen held his hand to the sky. The sun was exactly 4 fingers' width above the horizon. He knew that meant he had, at best, another hour of daylight. He pushed onward, knowing it would be tough on Blue. But Galen aimed to get to that settlement tonight. A clear moon would keep the road in view. "Though will the dark keep away that which you may find out here?" he wondered. As he had first seen from the rim of the gorge, the road was a straight shot, and as he neared the settlement, he could feel a bit of unease creep into his body. Galen suddenly realized the last time he'd been around a lot of people, he ended up dangling from a noose, and they ended up brutally slaughtered. If Maria hadn't been in such dire need of medical attention, he would have turned the wagon back, even risking climbing up the gorge path. But the fact was she was dying and would most likely not live out the next few days, unless he did something. "She's most likely to die anyway," he thought. But at the very least, he had to try. The closer he got, the more evidence was visible that there were indeed a number of people ahead. As the night slipped in all around him, he could see the dim firelight of their camps glowing, first as pinpricks in the darkness. As he got within a half mile, he could even hear their voices, laughs and rowdy shouts punctuating the otherwise silent night. And then in the shadow he saw it, and blinked to make sure his mind wasn't playing tricks on him. But again there it was, the two eyes glowing in the moonlight, coming toward him. And that's chapter 15 of Shadow Falls Badlands. Exactly what kind of detour has Galen taken, and what does it mean for the rest of his journey? I believe we're going to meet some new people very soon. And how they take to Galen and Maria, well, that remains to be seen. Send me your feedback at shadowfalls@podshowla.com and make sure to tell all your friends to listen to Shadow Falls Badlands. Go to shadowfalls.podshow.com for details. Big thanks to Kevin Reeves and Ian Baird for the Badlands Part 2 theme song Redemption, which you can find at music.podshow.com. Until we meet again, this is Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, fading to black.
Wake up in a small town, just another day. Last see the sun, the day's begun. Now I'm on my way. So many dusty roads have run down, searching for this place. Well, I've chased the miles and faced the trials, no matter what it takes. Gotta try before I never gave a damn. The anger boils, the gun recoils, spilling blood upon the land. Then I saw the